Here's Stan Warren Littrell.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Finding Hope Podcast number 49. We're very delighted to have Chris Hyde with us, and he's going to be talking about Rogue Retreat and our involvement with dealing with homeless issues around the area, and of course, how it's impacted by the recent fires that have been have shown much devastation around the area. And a reminder that you can hear the podcast at anchor.fm and through the Rogue Retreat Finding Hope podcast page. And without any further ado, let's join our conversation with Chris Hyde and Matt Bonus Grouse. We'll start out with some festivities. Of course, I'm very happy that we're going to be talking to Chris Hyde, and he's making a return appearance here on Finding Hope podcast number 49. So that's what we're recording right now. And without any further ado, because I know we're going to talk about some exciting stuff here today. Not that we don't, but you know what I'm saying. Matt, you want to start things out?
Yeah, absolutely. So our guest today is Chris Hyde. Chris, thank you for joining us again. I know that we've had you on the podcast before, but your role was a little bit different because back in that time you were coordinating the Clean Sweep program, and now you are overseeing our temporary urban campground. And so I just want to thank you for joining us today.
And I'd like to say the same thing.
Yes, absolutely.
Thank you, guys. I'm happy to be here.
Here's Stan Warren Littrell.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Finding Hope Podcast number 49. Today, we are ecstatic to have Chris Hyde with us, and he's going to be talking about the area around the Greenway and what Rogue Retreat is doing to help aid and solve it. Well, not solve it, but working with the homeless issue around Rogue Valley, and a reminder that you can hear this podcast at anchor.fm and as well as many other podcasting hosting services. And without any further ado, of course, you can also hear it through Amazon's A-Lady and just ask Alexa to play the Rogue Valley and the Rogue Retreat podcast. Tune in.
All right. Yeah. Well, and, you know, I figured we can kind of start off with maybe talking about a little bit about how your role has changed with Rogue Retreat.
Okay. Well, as you mentioned earlier, that I began working for Rogue Retreat as the Clean Sweep Coordinator. I was able to build that program fairly well to kind of what it is today, and I was eventually asked to take on a position at the Grants Pass Warming Center during the COVID, the initial outbreak of the COVID, and I worked out there for a couple of months, and it just kind of started to appear that things were developing out here in Medford, and an idea of the temporary urban campground had been conceived and was rapidly being implemented, and I applied for the position, and I was chosen to be the lead out there at the campground, and I guess the rest is history. Now, here we are.
First of all, I would like to say that I'm happy that you were appointed to this position, and I know you're doing a great job.
Yeah, I just want to say...
Well, thank you. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I just want to say, too, that we're definitely happy to have you on board, Chris. Can you talk a little bit about what the temporary urban campground is?
Of course. So the temporary urban campground, it's a fully fenced 130 by 200 foot site with 40 campsites on it that we fill with the population that we come across out on the Bear Creek Greenway, which is a bike path that runs through Medford here. And we have a unit of officers called the Livability Team, and they work directly with the homeless population on a regular basis, so they know them pretty well. And they actually refer them to us in their outreach. They'll make contact with them on the greenway or in the parks or in the alleys. And they'll have a conversation with them and they'll refer them to us to give them somewhere else to go. Excuse me. And they'll come and they'll check in over there at the Timber Urban Campground with us. And we'll do a little intake process, assign them a site. And then we'll start discovering the barriers to housing that they have and start working on those and successfully transition them forward to a better housing situation.
First of all, I want to ask, because I know this is something that I know that people will be thinking about, because we had one of those little pesky things called a fire. And how did that impact what you do?
Well, that's a good question, Stan. The initial fire that was a concern had broken out about 10 or 12 miles south of us out in Ashland. And it happened to be a very windy day, and the wind was headed north. And so the fire was pushing itself north towards us, and it moved from Ashland to Talent to Phoenix, which are the next two towns north of Ashland. And then eventually it had reached South Medford, which was only about a mile and a half away from where we were. So evacuation orders were being handed out all over the place. While we were waiting for a level three evacuation order for the boundary of the level three evacuation order to include us at the campground, one of our staff had seen open flames out on the Bear Creek Greenway, which was only about 100 yards away from us. And so fires were popping up all over the valley that day. And it just so happened that a fire popped up only 100 yards away, and our staff was totally on top of it. She had called me and said, "I see open flames where I'm at," and sent me a photo of it. And I said, "Get in the van now and evacuate now." So they evacuated to the expo, which is a big venue out here where it was an evacuation site that was developed that day. And the fire was eventually put out, and we were able to return to our site at about 12:30 in the morning. It was a very successful evacuation. Everyone was accounted for. Everybody was brought back safely. The unfortunate thing is the winds that had come through earlier in the day had decimated our campground, because we had these pop-up shade structures that are, you know, they're very temporary. They're supposed to be set up for like day use, picnics, you know, barbecues, the little 10x10s. Well, the wind had come through and just started ripping them out of the ground, and they were flying over the fences. It was ripping the covers off, and 18 sites were compromised of the 25 that we had had at the time. And then 2 hours later, we were on evacuation orders. So we returned to a decimated.
Wow.
And that was not such a terrific Tuesday, I might add.
No, it
just
definitely doesn't sound like
on
it was
the
fun Tuesday at all.
Oh, definitely not.
Yeah. And so, Chris, what has been, that was obviously a pretty traumatic event. How did the campers react to that type of stress?
The campers were very resilient, actually. We've got a pretty good rapport with them. The staff has a pretty good rapport with all the guests that live there. And so we have a decent level of trust between each other, to where they trusted that we had everything under control. And as soon as we saw the smoke clouds in the sky, we said, "Listen, it's possible that we may have to evacuate today. I want everybody to stay close by. We're going to be doing head counts once every hour. I have a van here to transport us here. If there is an evacuation order, I want to make sure that we can do this efficiently and safely." And everybody communicated and cooperated to the best of my expectations. If I had a dream of how well the execution of an evacuation would have went, then I lived out my dream that day. So
that's amazing. And that's a new campground too. And so it's not like you guys have evacuation order drills that you do on a regular basis. So this was all kind of, correct me if I'm wrong, but you guys were literally making it up as you go, as you were creating the plan. And so,
and that's the thing is about evacuation. Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, so that's pretty impressive that on the fly you were able to kind of create a process for evacuation without any practice.
Yeah, I mean, and really, like, you know, you can do earthquake drills and you can do fire drills, but an evacuation drill, I mean, you never know what kind of evacuation you're going to have, if it's for a flood or a tornado or a hurricane or a fire. Or, you know, evacuation plans, the thing about them that they're tricky is you don't really know the nature of the evacuation or the cause of the evacuation until it's time to do it, right? Unless you're practicing every natural disaster out there. So you're right. It does develop minute by minute. And as you know, we have multiple programs throughout the valley that we had to develop these evacuation orders and evacuation plans for within a matter of minutes. And I'm not sure if any other programs were evacuated, but I know that ours obviously was, and it was very successful. So yeah, we're very blessed that it went.
Absolutely.
It was interesting listening to that because I was following that day because I have a scanning app on my phone, and I was listening to the scanner and listening to what was going on the Greenway, and my heart was with you guys, and I was thinking about you guys so much that day. Not that I don't, but you know what I'm saying. It was just really interesting to have a sort of a bird's eye seat, so to speak.
Yeah, I bet it was. I know for myself, that fire that caused you guys to evacuate over there, Chris, also caused me to have to evacuate my house on two different occasions. But it was a very stressful time. And then on top of it, my daughter lost her place out in Phoenix. And so it was a very devastating day for this entire community. But I'm very grateful that the campground was able to be, one, exist and be able to be there to help shelter people that were on the Greenway previously. And then also that the campground did not get damaged by the fire. But you were talking about the wind damage because we had some high winds that day. Is there anything that the campground is needing to replace as a result of the damage that happened?
Yeah, so that's a good question. We've been in the process of changing over the pop-up shade structures to the more sturdier carport style ones. And they're a little bit larger. They're 10 by 20. They're made of a thicker tarp material. They're made of steel tubing or some sort of metal tubing. They're a lot stronger and they're a lot more suited for winter weather, high winds, those type of things. They protect the guests better. They have walls. We can put tarp walls on them that they come with. And we needed to get 45 of them. And we've been blessed to be donated 22 of them. So we still need 23 more of them. We're working on getting them every way we can. Obviously, there's not huge budgets involved with programs like these, or they're modified as we go. It's just one of those things where, as well as the fires breaking out, I'm sure we're not the only one that has that idea that those carport shelters are a good idea. And so we've actually come across the difficulty of actually procuring them because they've been sold out on more than one occasion when we went to go buy them.
Okay, and that was going to be my next question, is if people wanted to purchase one of those for you, where would they typically find them?
So they sell them at Costco. They're 10 by 20, and they're about like a tan-colored tarp, and they have like two windows in them and a door in them, and they're $239.99.
Okay.
All right. Did this fire teach you anything that you didn't know and that you are happy to learn for, you know, heaven forbid that if we have another such incident, but I mean, did it teach you anything that you learned from it?
I learned something new every day, right? That's the goal in life, but I learned a lot that day. We learned actually how well our staff works together, how well the guests work together, and how well the guests work with the staff. So, you know, there's obviously minimal rules that are involved in the campground or living at the campground, and those little minor typicals, they get broken here and there. A lot of people, they break the rules, right? But on that day, when it really mattered and there was a tragedy and it could have been life or death and there was such a risk at hand, the community, they just came together as equals and as a team and really just executed this, I mean, like professionals, like they had practiced it, right? So I learned that when it really matters, how well people can actually work together.
And it also might help dispel some stereotypes that exist surrounding the homeless population.
Yeah, I mean, of course, the homeless population, there's a stigma attached to it. You know, they say that they're all mental health patients or addicts or whatever the case may be. But those people are in their own struggle. We all have our own struggles, oh, right? Yeah. Everybody has their own struggle. And regardless of the nature, of their struggles, you wouldn't have known. You wouldn't have known a single thing. You wouldn't have known anybody had a concern in the world that besides keeping themselves and their neighbors safe that day.
And you know, so, one thing, Matt.
Yeah, I think it would dispel that they can't accomplish.
Sorry, Chris. One thing I really want to really give an idea for Matt. I know Matt knows about this. I really want us to interview one of the people from the livability team and have them to talk to us, if I can only speak. give us how they see things and from their side and how they're working with us here at Rogue Retreat. And I think that'd be a really fun thing to be able to do.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, that'll definitely be something that we will strive to do in the near future, is to get one of the livability officers on this. Chris, I had another quick question for you. What has the success of the campground been like so far? I mean, it is a very low barrier, kind of very basic shelter. But I know that you guys have been pretty busy down there with working with community partners. So what's the success been like?
The success has actually been probably double what I think definitely what myself and possibly what other people have anticipated. We've served 114 people. We've successfully transitioned 41. That's about 40%, between 35 and 40%, I think, off the top of my head. I was hoping for a 20% success rate when this started, because we start, you know, like you said, it's very low barrier. We meet them where they're at. They can be in their active addiction. We meet these people on the greenway, in an alley, they don't have any structure or discipline or rules to adhere to. They, you know, the idea of going into any kind of a quote-unquote program to them sounds like the worst thing in the world initially, right?
Right.
So we anticipated resistance. We anticipated a lot of uncooperative people. They come here. They get that safe spot. They start to really reassess their goals and their priorities, and they start to just make positive change on their own accord. Of course, yes, we have service providers that come in so they can engage with them actively. And we just encourage the growth, and we show them that there's a better way and that there's a better life and they don't have to be doing this. And once they have met that basic need of shelter and safety, then they start to contemplate the other things that they want to change. And 7 people have voluntarily admitted themselves into inpatient treatment, residential inpatient treatment. That doesn't usually occur at a level of a program that we're at. 100% of our vets have been transitioned to another program, I believe, in a week. I don't know if any of them stayed there for longer than a week. Multiple people have gotten private housing from applying for housing apps and waiting lists they were already waiting on, or from getting a job and being able to secure a room somewhere. Let's see. We've moved people onto the Kelly Shelter, to the Medford Gospel Mission, private housing. We've reunified a couple of people with their families. They come there and they see that those resources are there available to them, and we develop a good relationship with them.
You know, that's a very key thing, what you mentioned. I mean, especially the whole business about with the families, because what often happens, and it's been my experience from watching some of the people that I've known in my life, that a lot of times ties with families are almost often permanently broken. And not to be regained again. And if they can be regained, that's a big thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think I was Franklin Graham, who is the gentleman that started the Community First Village down in Austin, Texas. One of the things that he said that he found that the really leading cause of homelessness is really the catastrophic loss of family, where we lose our entire safety net around us. And so in many cases, these programs, we're trying to replace that. Chris, I know that you were saying that you had identified a goal of 20% success rate. Do you think it's been the wraparound services with not only Livability team and RoboTreat staff, but also the partner agencies that are really kind of pushing that success rate to go up?
I do, 100%. As you mentioned, RoboTreat has a great relationship with the Livability team. The Livability team has a great relationship with this population, generally speaking. Mm-hmm. And then we have a great relationship with community providers around here. And with the ability to get them to come in and do their outreach with us, they're accessible to the guests, to the campers. And a lot of these people, you know, they work office jobs somewhere downtown where, especially during COVID, it's hard to get an appointment with them. It's hard to get into the building. You know, you might be able to give someone some instruction. I want you to go here or here and fill out this form and turn it in and talk to this person. Well, that is a journey to somebody like that living there at the campground. But if they're there Monday through Friday rotating in and out of the place and they're readily accessible like they are, these people are people that you might have a hard time getting an appointment with or making it to an appointment with, but they're there. And so we say, oh, well, you know, you're struggling with housing or with your food stamps or with your medical insurance. Well, they happen to be here right now. Why don't you go have a conversation with them? And it gets done right there on the spot. Mm-hmm. So those little things are huge successes. They can do that. And then they're like, well, now I have medical insurance. Now I have food stamps. And then they just start wanting, they end up taking the reins. And
those are big things.
Absolutely. They are. So, Chris, I know that the campground started with 25 spaces and has now kind of grown to 40. What are the future plans for the campsite?
So it's definitely been determined that this need is definitely there, that it's larger than we opened it to be, that it's probably larger than it is now, and that it works. And so the future plans are moving to another site with 80 campsites. Mm-hmm. So, and at this future site, you know, there's a warehouse there, there's power there, there's water there, there's asphalt tops there, there's already a fence around it. It's more suited for what we're doing and more suited for more people. Okay. And more suited for the winter months. So really it's just been, I think, determined that this thing works.
Yeah, I definitely agree. It has been determined that it works. And Chris, based on your kind of knowledge of the homeless community and everything, would you say that we need more of these campgrounds in the community?
Absolutely. So the idea initially was to have the one, and then the idea was to have the two, and then the idea was to just have one larger one. And I think the idea has been kicked around as to have the larger one and the smaller one now. And, you know, honestly, at the rate that we're going, these things could be in every major community.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I think they should be, honestly. I think it's a more cost-effective approach. And it literally gives us a place where we can allow people to be and then do direct outreach to pull them into our programs. And definitely, I think that you are kind of becoming a trend center in that sense. Chris, last week you participated in a Hope University call where we had about 20 different cities from the state of Oregon calling in to learn how to set up these temporary urban campgrounds. What was that experience like, having all these different communities wanting to hear our opinion in the work that we're doing?
Oh, it was a great experience. It was, you know, it was really humbling. It was really exciting. You see that, I mean, it was another testament to how this works, right? In order to be able to gain the attention of all those jurisdictions, and them to take a level of interest at that level, and then, you know, to come down here for a tour, it was great because, you know, everybody says, well, you're not going to solve homelessness. No, you're right. We can't, right? But we can work on it. And like these 114 people, if this campground wasn't here, these people would be lost longer. We would not even have an opportunity to help them.
Well, and just think about how many would have been on the greenway during those fires.
The attention that it's gotten is going to result. I mean, So, well, I can tell you that at least 28 of them would have been on the Greenway during those fires. So,
yeah, that was a thought that popped into my head last week.
Yeah, that's 28 lives that not only did we definitely save, but, yeah.
It's definitely puts things into perspective. That was something that Chad and I talked about, was if that campground hadn't been exist, the loss of life on the Greenway could have been much greater for sure. Which is just even more, makes me even more grateful for seeing something like the campground. And Chris, I know we are coming down to the end of our time here, but you're the first point of entry now for our programs in many cases. And when you are working with folks, you're going to be dealing with folks that are in a place of hopelessness. What is your message of hope today for them to maybe grab a hold of something to look forward to?
Well, like you said, this is the starting point. And what I always tell them is, well, you're safe here. So now you've established a safe spot. Mm-hmm. Once you have that safe spot, then you can start thinking about meeting your other basic needs. And that we're here to help you. You know, we're not here to give you a handout. We're here to give you a hand up, but we are definitely here to help you. You know, I've been there. I've had my own struggles in my own times and my own days, and then I'll just share my own story with them a little bit, and then they'll kind of relate to me. That they'll just see how far I've come from that. And like you know, as a lot of our staff, you know, they've been through our programs or one or the other, and now they're in this role of being able to help people. And that message is huge, because they really need to know that someone believes in them, and they really need to know that somebody gave us a chance, and now that's how we've gotten away from the situations that we were in, right?
Absolutely.
So I just let them know, look, I believe in you, and you're safe here. That's the message.
And I'm proud of the work you're doing, for whatever that's worth. But anyway, I really like hearing the stories and that you talk about every time that we attend our little staff meeting. Actually, it's getting bigger and bigger all the time, but it's interesting to hear your stories and what you're accomplishing, and I really can't say enough.
Absolutely. And Chris, once again, I just want to thank you for being willing to do this podcast interview with us and talk about the growth of not only your position and your role with the agency, but also the temporary urban campground, which is going to create ripple effects in communities beyond our own. And so thank you for being here today.
Oh, thank you for having me. I just want to make sure that it's known that it's really the whole community. It's the whole team. It's the whole staff of Rogatree. It's, you know, this is definitely not done by any one person or even a small group of people. It's a very huge collaborative community effort, and really teamwork is really what it takes.
Yep, absolutely. And we want
to thank you for having me.
Yes, and we want to thank you for helping build that culture. And so, Stan, you want to take us away?
Yes, indeed. This concludes, and we have one more to do yet today. This concludes Finding Hope episode 49.
Wow.
So just a little bit of time, we'll have the nifty 50 and done and in the can. And I've already done most of the editing on one of them, so I'll do that probably later this evening on the second and third one.
Awesome. And
so this is Stan and saying, have a great day, everybody, and take care of yourselves and be good to each other.
Thank you.